she looked. He'd already seen her determination for himself, but he had to admit it was a very convincing act.
"And how long until the suitors start chasing her?" Ilario asked.
Tristan smiled.
"I'm sure Laylee would find it scandalous for a young woman to formally beg for one betrothal to be dismissed and then jump into another. It will probably be at least a year before she's formally available."
"Hmm."
Ilario nodded, finally turning his attention back to the girl.
"And what do you think about that, young lady?"
"I think Lord Oberheim is correct. If I manage to please Her Majesty, I'm hoping that making a good marriage will be something that can wait for a few years at least."
"And here I thought an eligible young woman would rather meet the wealthy options at court than bother with things like swordsmanship."
Cherry pressed her lips together before answering.
"Sire, I think you drastically underestimate most women. We focus on marriages because that's the only power many of us have. All our lives, we're told what we will and will not like, then get judged because we try to actually believe it. Look at the Queen. She fought as a gladiator and is still the most elegant woman in any room because she has to be, I'm sure, not because she's simply that enamored of her dress collection."
The former king was nodding.
"And how do you suppose we change that, Miss Butrichini?"
"Slowly," Cherry told him. "It's easy to write laws making things so, but it's not as easy to convince people they should agree. Just look at what people are saying about the games."
Tristan stepped closer.
"What are they saying about the games?"
She lifted her chin.
"That anyone foolish enough to get convicted deserves to die for their crimes."
"And that most of those crimes were simply not being rich enough," he countered.
"People don't like to think about that." She glanced back at the king. "They prefer to believe they are better and the fools dying in those arenas were somehow worse. Doesn't matter if that's because they were lazy, greedy, or anything else. To most people, it's nothing more than proof that the gods found them more worthy because they managed to stay just barely out of debt. The same is true for women. How many times have either of you..."
She stopped, snapping her mouth shut.
"My apologies, sire."
"No," Ilario insisted. "Please, go on."
"I just assumed that at some point in your lives, you both have been glad to be a man."
"It's true," Tristan assured her. "When I was younger, I thought women were put here to amuse me. I'd find the one I liked best, never worrying about if she felt the same, and have her treat me the way I deserved."
He looked at Ilario.
"Tell me you were any different. Look at how you picked Laylee's mother for nothing but her good looks."
"And the treaties," Ilario reminded him.
"But I agree. Kalani never had an option, but I did. I took that for granted until it was my daughter I was supposed to sell off. I just wish I knew how to change it."
"Like I said, slowly," Cherry told them. "You must allow the people to come to their own decisions, but set them up to make the right ones. Show them crime rates have dropped, and then mention any industries or businesses started by former gladiators. Make them put the pieces together on their own, but give the populace all of the pieces that fit and restrict the ones that don't."
Ilario harumphed.
"I think we need to get Laylee a council of women to advise her."
"I assure you, sire," Cherry replied, "that we have spent enough time thinking about this."
"I was being serious,"
he told the girl.
"She calls them her maids," Tristan said. "Why do you think she's so picky about who she has dress her? It isn't because she cares that much about how she looks." "And here I thought it was because no one else wanted to deal with the sword work those girls are so adamant about."
The king gestured to the weapon Tristan still held.
"It's going to take Miss Butrichini a bit before she can handle that properly. You may want to start building her muscles up with something a bit shorter. If you dig through the armory, you might even find a few with a hilt big enough for both of her hands." "Later," Tristan assured him. "Lay should be done soon, and I want to make sure I have Cherry back to my sister to be properly introduced."
"Oh," Ilario asked.
"Already on a first-name basis, are we?"
Tristan just pointed at his chest.
"Not royal, so I can get away with that."
Then he lifted the sword.
"I'm assuming you'll want this back."
"No," Ilario assured him.
"I have plenty more that won't hurt my pride as much. If she can use it, let the girl keep it." That it was made to be so pretty just makes it even more fitting. Perfect. Now to convince Alessia to figure out how to make it fit with her dresses. Thanks, Ilario. Just doing my part to keep my little girl safe. When you leave, can you send Bettino back in? We have a game to finish.
Hearing the dismissal, Cherry stood, but paused. Are you intentionally letting him win, sire?
No. Why?
She pointed at the board. Because he's preparing to move through here, and you're doing nothing to counter it.
I see.
He smiled at her.
Thank you. Tristan, make sure Miss Butrachini plays at least one game each night with the Prince Consort's captain, if you would.
Tristan gave him a confused look.
Sure. So that at least one of those girls is properly trained in tactics as well as combat. Yes, sire.
Tristan chuckled as he offered Cherry his arm.
Shall we?
Yes, my lord, she agreed as meekly as always. He didn't talk about it again until they were in the next hall and well out of earshot.
Cherry, where did you learn to play Go?
My father. It amused him to have me play against his business partners. I always thought it was like a dancing monkey, good for nothing but a little shock and awe.
It's not. Go is one of the best ways to learn strategy. Many women in the palace play at it so they have some way to spend time with the men, but very few would have noticed that move. I wouldn't have a few months ago.
But surely...
I didn't grow up with such things, he reminded her. I understood only the strategies necessary to keep one man alive for one game. Go prepares the player for something much bigger, but I think Ilario is wrong. Timoteo would teach you all of the well-known strategies, but they are the same ones everyone else knows the counter for. I think you should learn from the one person who makes up her own rules.
Who?
The Queen.
I couldn't, she gasped. Her Highness has much more important things to worry about than gaming with her maids.
Actually, she doesn't.
He patted her hand.
Play with Essa and Astrid, too. The three of you shouldn't bother with the tried and true tactics, but see if you can devise your own. Find ways to make Lei work for her wins. I think you're the only one who can.
Then I will. She took a deep breath and nodded to herself. If being soundly trounced by the Queen can show Her Majesty my appreciation, then I will gladly play a game with her.
It's not just a game, Tristan reminded her. It's military tactics, and that's exactly how Lei looks at it. Keep that in mind when you're sitting across from her.
Tristan, she looked up. I'm just her maid. I think you're making more of this than it is.
Nope. You're not making enough of it. Trust me. Lei doesn't need someone to fix her hair. She needs someone to challenge her mind. That is what her maids are for, and your eyes say you're perfect for the job. We just need to find a few more women to give her alternate views. It's the only way she can have a council of female advisors, but this country desperately needs someone to shake things up a bit.
Chapter 10 Lei dismissed the man before her, relieved that her decision would actually help him. At least his smile made her think he was as pleased with the outcome as she was. Unfortunately, her stomach didn't care. It was no longer trying to do flips. Now, it was simply annoyed that it was empty and had been all morning. With a gesture, she asked the guard to dismiss the rest of the petitioners for the day. She needed lunch, and the little cub inside her wouldn't let her forget. Just as she moved to stand, someone called out from the back of the audience hall.
Your Majesty!
It sounded like Armando. Lifting her chin, she tried to spot him, thankful when he raised a white-clad arm above the heads of the crowd.
Majesty, I have a messenger from Lanmont.
Without hesitation, she waved him forward. Calling back would be crass, even though she wanted to, and she was still on display to her citizens, but a messenger from Lanmont? That province was now held by her former team owner turned nobility. Most of his guards and staff had been gladiators. In other words, they were her people, and she knew they wouldn't ask for an audience without a very good reason. The pale head of hair she saw moving toward her proved she was right. Plague, she asked when he was close enough. He didn't respond until he was at the edge of the stairs. Then he knelt.
Queen Aravati, I have a message from Lord Abandon through the Dom of Lanmont.
Then he held up a very tired-looking scrap of paper.
She glanced over at the people gawking as they slowly left, each one trying to hear whatever they could.
"Please, my friend, rise and show me." Plague flashed a smile at the guards before trotting up the stairs to hand over the paper. Behind him, a gesture from Armando made the men relax. From the corner of her eye, she saw Crush nod in greeting. The gesture was subtle, but proved his respect for the new captain of the Landmont Guard.
"Read it," Plague said, keeping his voice low.
"And I'm pretty sure we don't want to talk about this here."
Her eyes were already scanning the crumpled page. The message was written in the local language of Hamish, but badly. The punctuation was all Rion, and the letters were shaped more like those of Rioch. Still, she could make it out. On the surface, it seemed to be an innocent trade offer, but the words of a certain gladiator whispered in the back of her mind. Death had warned her that the treaty between Norheim and Rhea specifically mentioned the heir of Rhea's name, preventing their neighbors to the west from invading without a significant financial loss. No Rheans could enter Norheim without the presence of the Caesar's heir, Claudius Gaius, for any reason. Unfortunately, that man had been missing for nearly 4 years, and he had every intention of keeping it that way. But most people had forgotten, or, like her, never known. If a Norheim lord signed a deal with a Rheon senator, it would supersede the treaty. She would have little recourse to demand the penalties of her father's peace deal after the fact. Granted, the whole thing could be completely innocent. But Layli couldn't forget the Rheons who had tried to attack her carriage outside Moylock. The timing was just a little too coincidental.
"And this came from Abandon?" she asked. That was the home of Timoteo's family.
Plague nodded.
"Yeah, your guardsman's brother delivered it himself. I just figure if they got one, how many other border lords did too?"
Layli gestured to the door behind her.
"Would you care to have lunch with me? I want to talk about this more, but I'm starving."
"Sure."
But Plague didn't move. Instead, he reached into his coat for another letter. This one was clearly sealed and stamped.
"The Odium told me to give this to you after you'd read that."
She lifted a brow as she broke the seal.
"Is this formal?"
He shrugged.
"No idea. He handed it to me as I was mounting. Said not to ask, that it was for your eyes only, and you'd let me know if you thought it was important."
Keeping the smile from her lips was hard. The Odian's hand was nearly as bad as Tristan's, but he and his team had learned a few court manners over the last month. Then again, they'd had to in order to evict the previous owners of the fortress that had become their new home. The letter in her hands was just more proof that even an old gladiator could learn new tricks.
"He's asked a boon," she told Plague, still reading.
"Seems you have no family left." Plague swallowed before answering.
"No. Dad left when I was little, and Mom passed when I was in the games. Like I said when you gave me my rubies, it's just me now."
Her smile finally won. "No, it's not. The Odians asked for the right to adopt you legally. He's not married, so this is very unconventional, but I do owe him a very large debt. He's made it clear that granting this boon would more than settle things between us. Are you interested?"
"What?" Plague asked.
"You, the Odian family," she clarified.
"You'd become Maxon Serapio, son of Theodian Serapio, unless you were attached to your surname." The poor guy blinked at her in confusion.
"Theo wants to make me his son?"
She lifted the paper. "That's what he says. Plague, I'm not required to approve this. Not unless you're willing."
"Yes," he breathed. "Of course I'm willing. You know how well he's taken care of us lately. I just never..."
His mouth snapped shut.
"I mean, I'd be honored. I have no fondness for a name given to me by a man who didn't want me. I'd be pleased to become a Serapio."
She tipped her head to the floor. "Then kneel for me." Without looking, she reached back.
"Crush, my sword, if you don't mind."
The sound of steel sliding on leather filled the almost empty room, then the leather-wrapped hilt was pressed into her palm. In a smooth motion, Layli moved the flat of the blade to Plague's right shoulder. Theodian's argument for adopting Plague had been too strong to ignore, but Layli had a feeling her friend hadn't put it all together yet. The Dom of Landmont wasn't a young man, nor was he married. If Rhea was threatening the border, for his province held a large swath of vulnerable land. It only made sense for him to expand his family as quickly as possible, because currently, Lanmont had no apparent heir to the title. This adoption would fix that. As Queen of Norrheim, ruler of this nation, I grant Theodian Serapio this boon of a true family. You, Maxon Tenicus, known as Plague, will forever after be acknowledged as Theodian Serapio's eldest son and heir to the title of Dom, first in line to inherit the province of Lanmont upon his death. She moved the sword to his other shoulder, touching it only briefly before removing the weapon. Please rise, Lord Serapio, and be welcome in my court as a peer. We will now accept your oath of fealty.
What? Plague glanced behind him at the guards. I haven't learned.
Armando moved closer.
I, Maxon Serapio, he whispered, giving Plague the words. Swear my loyalty to the crown of Norrheim and to the rule of Queen Leilani Meridia Aravati. Then anything else you want to add?
I, Plague said, then took a deep breath.
Maxon Serapio, the Plague of Lanmont, swear my loyalty, my sword and my life, to not only the crown of Norrheim, but also the gladiator queen, Leilani Meridia Aravati, and her chosen heir until I take my last breath. May it be in service of her reign. Long live the Wolf of Overheim.
She chuckled. Well said, my friend. So now can we eat? She lifted the crumpled note, showing she hadn't forgotten. He staggered to his feet, still looking a bit overwhelmed.
Yeah, sorry. Theodian just made me his heir?
Laylee gestured for Crush and Armando to follow them. He had a very valid point. Since he has no wife and no family line to pass the title through, it only makes sense that he starts his own. Subtly, she lifted the note from Abandon again. Because none of us knows what the future may hold. How long did it take you to ride here, anyway? He waited to answer until they were outside the audience hall. Moving to her side, Plague lowered his voice so it wouldn't echo on the marble walls.
About a week. Probably took the younger Lord Abandon at least 3 days to get to us.
That means this started before your coronation.
Kinda what I was thinking. She rubbed at her brow. And I've had other run-ins with them lately, both here before my vacation and when I was returning from Moylock. Plague, I see a pattern.
Me too.
He glanced back, checking the people around them.
Theo was hoping you could help us increase our defenses a little.
And I intend to, but I have the exact same problem he does. My heir apparent was found guilty of treason, in case you forgot.
Couldn't forget that, he grumbled. Kinda how you got that crown.
Look.
Her fingers on his hand stopped the next words. Lunch, she told him again. In my suite with my husband and guardsmen, if you're not offended to sit with those of a lesser station. Plague ducked his head, but it didn't hide the chuckle.
Gonna take me a while to get used to that. I figure in a couple of hours all of this will hit me. So what exactly do I get called now?
Lord Maxon is considered familiar, she explained, thankful to have something a little less sensitive to discuss as they made their way across the palace where anyone could hear. Lord Lanmont or Dom Lanmont is Theodian, until you inherit the title for yourself. Until then, you will simply be Lord Serapio, the future Dom of Lanmont.
And Plague to you?
Only if you continue to call me Laylee, she promised. Or Wolf. I'm pretty convinced Crush can't remember that I've ever had another name. A deep chuckle proved her most recent shadow was listening.
It's the only name you need. Rank, title, and person all in one, Wolf.
See? She moved toward the left side of the hall, aware that foot traffic was thicker this close to the kitchens, and gestured to the stairs on that side. Plague stayed at her shoulder with Crush right behind him. Armando, however, slowed.
Crush, I'll catch up, he whispered.
Laylee paused. You okay? Armando's cheeks turned a bit darker.
I was waiting at the front gate for my wife when Plague arrived, Your Majesty. Tristan gave me a long lunch today so I could spend some time with her.
He glanced toward the kitchen door where a younger woman stood nervously, her hands clasped before her. Is that her? Laylee asked. The blonde?
Yeah.
The girl might be a year or two older than Laylee, but she wasn't stunning. Heavy freckles covered the bridge of her nose,
which was a little too large, but her lips were lush and looked like they usually wore a smile. While her dress was simple brown wool, it was well-fit and elegant in its style. The best thing about her, though, was the way her eyes followed her husband.
"Introduce us," Laylee asked.
Armando paused. "Laylee, she doesn't know."
She didn't give him the chance to make an excuse. Where she went, her guards would follow, so Laylee headed right to the girl.
"Madame Grimaldi, you're Armando's wife, correct?"
"Laylee,"
Armando groaned out behind her. Before her, the young woman dipped her head and curtsied.
"Yes, Your Majesty. Gianna Grimaldi. I didn't mean to interrupt his duties, my queen."
"You didn't," Laylee assured her.
"Lord Maxon and I were just heading up to lunch, but some business came up. Would you care to walk with us? I feel like you're almost a part of the family with all the stories I've heard."
Gianna's cheeks flushed immediately.
Her eyes flipped to her husband.
"Armando!"
He couldn't help but laugh.
"Good things, G, I promise."
Benny offered his arm to his wife.
"You sure it's not a problem, Laylee?"
"Not at all. I think fate may have just done me a favor, actually. Tell me, Madame Grimaldi, do you happen to know anything about dresses?
The making or the wearing, Your Majesty?"
"Either one," Laylee replied. "It seems that since I gained a crown, I've lost touch with fashion completely, and that's not acceptable for a woman in my situation. Armando, how would you feel about your wife working?"
He carefully put his hand on Gianna's, smiling proudly.
"I have a very funny feeling it might let us actually spend some time together."
"Good," Laylee said. Then, under her breath, added, "A farmer's daughter, a noble's, a merchant's girl, and a soldier's wife." She looked back at Crush.
"And what did you do before you spit on my cousin?"
He grunted, the sound almost a laugh.
"I was a butcher. Mara and I lived on the poor side of Landmont. She had to move into a women's building when I went to the Sands, because she couldn't make the lease on her own. It's not allowed."
"And a townswoman," Laylee said. "Well, I think that just about covers it. Come on, men. We have a lot of work to do, and I think I finally have the right people to help."
Chapter 11. The royal suite was large, but it was not meant for more than a handful of people. After a moment of awkwardness, Laylee decided to entertain her friends in the mahogany room. With her six guards, Connell, his captain, the four ladies, and Plague, they were definitely going to need a bigger table. Granted, seating everyone was its own circus. In the end, Laylee claimed the chair at the head of the table. Connell took the place to her right while Tristan sat on her left. Plague went beside Tristan, Timoteo beside Connell, and the rest of the guards and maids sat intermixed beyond them. Thankfully, everyone was still within speaking distance.
"My first official day as queen has already been insane," Laylee announced, making all eyes look at her.
"Since I see her here, I assume Astrid hired Cherry Butrucini on a probationary trial. Essa, I wanted to see if Gianna, Armando's wife, down there can help you. Hire her if you think she's a good fit. If not, I'd still like her to become one of my maids. That should give me a retinue large enough to appease the court and keep only trustworthy people around us."
When her sister nodded, Laylee gestured to Plague.
"Oh, and Theodian has officially adopted Plague, making him Lord Serapio, the future Dom of Landmont. Sorry, Grigori, he outranks you now."
"Seriously?" Grigori asked. "I'm not calling him Lord anything." "Well, if I do, it'll be Lord Plague."
"I'm fine with that," Plague said. "Or just Plague. Figure that once a man has spent time on the sands..."
He flicked his eyes to Grigori's waist, where the guardsman had been wounded.
"And you've done that."
"But," Laylee interrupted before the guys could become too involved with congratulating each other. "Plague brought me a message." She looked over to Timoteo.
"From your brother."
Lifting the paper, she decided to summarize instead of trying to read the poor Hamish. "The long and short of it is that Senator Vinco wants to sign a trade alliance with one of the minor border lords, a treaty that would welcome Rhea inside Norhaim with open arms. The Dom of Landmont has asked for assistance to make sure his province is well protected."
"Shit," Timoteo breathed. "That's a long border, Laylee,
and Vinco is the senator who controls the lands on the other side. He's known to have aspirations to be named the next Caesar if Claudius Gaius doesn't return home. Last I heard, the Rhian heir was still enjoying time finding himself, or so his mother insists, but he hasn't been seen in a while.
Almost 4 years, Layli agreed. I know. Next, she turned to her husband. Connell, I need you to figure out how we can move soldiers in for support and supply them, preferably from the eastern side of Norheim. He nodded, but everyone paused at the sound of the door opening. A line of kitchen girls made their way in, each one carrying a different dish. Thankfully for Layli's stomach, it all looked to be simple food. While the plates and trays were set out for the queen's impromptu lunch meeting, everyone around the table murmured softly to the people beside them. Layli, however, watched, looking at their expressions and the tension in their manners. The most obvious was Gianna, but that made sense. The woman probably was worried about what she knew and the new things she would likely hear in such company. Gianna, Layli called to her. I'm assuming that Armando discusses his work with you. Her face jerked up, her eyes growing larger. Majesty.
It's Layli, Armando corrected, before the queen could. It's okay, my dear.
He kissed her fingers and turned to Layli.
I do. She knows she can't tell another soul, and she never has.
Kinda what I thought. Have you taught her how to use a sword yet? He waffled his hand.
A bit. She's far better with throwing knives, but she could defend herself if she had to.
Good. Layli paused while the serving girls began to slowly file out of the room. I want you to schedule 2 hours a day, at least, with both her and Cherry. You can pick another guardsman to help you if you'd like, but I want them to know at least the basics. If you can find more time, that's even better. But you all can't let your other duties slip. If at all possible, I intend to surround myself with people who've actually lived in the country I'm trying to rule.
I'll make sure he has the time to train them, Tristan promised as he reached to fill her plate.
Good. She leaned back to give him room and surveyed the faces around her. I know a lot has happened and a little too fast, but we don't have any other choice. Court expects me to have a gaggle of maids. I'd prefer those to be women I can trust who will have the audacity to advise me. I'm well aware that the four of you and Crush's wife, Mara, who will arrive tomorrow, know many things I can't even imagine. My guards have already shown they can and will speak their mind. But I'm going to need all of you if I want to run this country in a way that benefits the actual people who live in it, and not just the nobility who get fat on your taxes. I need every single person in this room to help me.
Us, Connell added between bites. I have every intention of taking as much of the tedious work from Layli as possible. Considering this new development,
he tilted his head to the note on the table.
I think she's going to be busy.
Layli nodded. Which brings me to my next point. Glancing at Tristan, she paused. I am pregnant. Slowly, she looked back to the crowd seated before her. Just over 2 months, so it's too early to tell the populace, but I want all of you to know. Some of you already do. There will be changes because of this, like Tristan saying I'm restricted on my sparring partners, and my training schedule will need to be lighter.
We can do that, Edwin promised. Horace chuckled. Pretty sure I'm not brave enough to raise a sword to you until the baby's born. Tristan would kill me for it. I would, Tristan agreed. But that also means no one's bumping her. She's not allowed to lift anything too heavy, or...
Astrid cut him off. She's just pregnant, Tristan, not an invalid. If you and Connell think she's suddenly become weak, I'll have Mama explain things to both of you, so lay off. Layli lifted a hand, pulling their attention back to her. But it's more than that. Guys, I can't announce my condition yet. If the court knows, then word will travel fast. That means I need to continue doing things the same way I always have, so no one suspects anything has changed. Right now, Rhea will see me as a marriage prospect, and that gives me a level of protection I'm not willing to lose. I still need an official heir, one who could take the crown and do something with it if anything happens to me. Tristan's eyes narrowed slightly, proving he was trying to figure out what she was thinking.
I won't let anything happen to you. And there are things even you can't stop, Timoteo pointed out.
I mean, now that she's pregnant.
Tristan glared across the table.
She's going to be fine.
Timoteo leaned forward to meet Tristan's eyes.
That's exactly what we hope, but none of us have any control over that.
Tristan, even if she is fine, she'll still be laid up for weeks after giving birth.
And if the gods have other plans, things happen often enough that she needs to have another line of succession.
Laylee spoke up. Which is why I want to name Connell my heir, contingent on the birth of this child. That way there will be a secure line of succession. All around the table, people started talking. None sounded angry. It seemed that everyone liked the idea, except for the man sitting to her right.
No,
Connell said, loud enough to cut off the merriment. Slowly, he wiped his mouth clean and dropped the napkin beside his plate. Why not? Laylee asked. You've proven you'll rule well and for the people. I can't think of anyone better suited to make fair laws, and knowing you're the next in line secures Norheim for many generations.
And you forget my family, he pointed out. My arrogant brother and power-hungry father, the husbands of my sisters. If you put me in the line of succession, you also put them within sight of the crown, and I assure you they are no better than the Sarasonas you just defeated. It's a bad idea, Laylee, but even that isn't why.
He reached over and clasped her hand.
You can't make me your heir, because you made it very clear that the prince consort would never rule. If you change your mind now, every noble in Norheim will think you're nothing more than a foolish woman, turned stupid by night in bed. I will not do anything to harm the Aravati reign, especially not with our child already on the way.
Then who, she asked him, should I start making my way down the second, third, and fourth cousins to find someone who might suffice? And if Rhea is already knocking on our door? Connell just shook his head.
I think the answer is a lot closer than you want to admit. You've already said it yourself. Your first day has been filled with insanity. Why not continue? The answer is so obvious, even if it isn't easy. Laylee, the crown of this country should belong to an Aravati, regardless of what name they hide behind.
Essa sucked in a breath, loud enough to draw attention. Dario, she gasped. The tingles of fear tickled the back of Laylee's neck at the idea. Dario Roy, the second horseman, was her half-brother, a bastard sired by her father. He was good, honest, and the perfect candidate, but he was still a bastard, one who was officially known as the legitimate son of a minor noble. If Laylee wanted to name him, she'd have to expose her father's indiscretions. She'd have to convince her dad to publicly claim not just Dario, but all three of his kids from Kiara. Alain would be shamed before the entire court. Her siblings would become princes and a princess in their own right, but her father's legacy would be tainted. And yet, none of that would harm her right to succession. It wouldn't make her look weak. It would prove that she was fair. Thoughts spun through her head while she tried to imagine every possible outcome, but it all really came down to a few minor complications. Essa, she asked, do you think you could deal with the embarrassment? She waved that off. I'm not worried about that. What about my father, Laylee? How would he be able to show his face in court after this? Laylee slowly began to smile. I think with pride. Oh, there will be gossip, but what if I make this out to be a duty he did for the crown? A secret he kept, in the strictest confidence because of his devotion to my father. And the next master of horse, Essa asked. Will you allow a prince to do that?
Why not? Astrid demanded. Why can't a prince be the master of horse? Should the citizens be expected to pay for the luxurious living of an ever-expanding royal family? How far down the line would we have to get before the children of a monarch's children are no longer considered royal?
One generation, Laylee told her. Typically, younger siblings are married off into other families, or granted their own holdings, and their children take those titles. Astrid smiled.
So it sounds like instead of marrying into Lord Roy's family, he'd be treated as if he were adopted. If he's not replaced as the heir and does ascend to the throne, then he will be king. If not, he will simply be the master of horse who is also a prince. I think it's a good precedent, Laylee.
Although, Laylee pointed out, you'd stay Lady Astrid if you married him, instead of becoming a princess. Your title would descend from Alain's position, not Dario's, unless he takes the crown. She shrugged.
My brother already made me a lady, so the rest doesn't really matter.
Good. Laylee paused for a bite of her meal. Now for the next problem. I need to send someone to speak to Tor's gladiators. Someone with enough rank to show my respect, but not so much that it would cause anyone to pay attention.
Your dad, Tristan offered.
She shook her head. He's too recognizable.
Lay, Tristan asked. What are you doing?
Getting enough information to make the right decisions. Between Timoteo's knowledge of what has happened on the border in the past and plagues of what is happening now, we still only have half the story. I want to talk to someone who might know what our neighboring nation might be doing.
A gladiator.
Slowly, she nodded. Death had told her things in confidence. She had no intention of betraying that trust, but she also wouldn't ignore a resource that could make life better for Norheim. She had a feeling the man wouldn't expect her to, either. Tristan, everyone on the sands has a story. Not all of us are able to talk about them. Please trust me on this.
Always, pup,
he promised.
But if it's a gladiator, maybe you should send Plague.
She glanced at her friend and made a face. He'd be a good one, but we need him here right now. Any other suggestions? Me, Essa said. Everyone turned to look at her, making the girl's cheeks flush. I'm just noble enough right now that me visiting a gladiator for an evening would only be a mild scandal. I'm your sister, which only a very small number of people even know, but if you plan to legitimize all of us, that would hold a lot of weight. I also am not important enough for anyone at court to miss, and I have nothing to offer in discussions about soldiers and treaties. She was right. Essa really would be perfect, and it would be one more way to prove to death that Laylee had no intention of playing by the rules either of them had spent so many years trying to change.
Do you think you could handle the trip?
Tor's men trained to the south, between here and Everton. Essa rolled her eyes. My father is the master of horse, Laylee. I can ride better than you. Send me with a pair of guards and stable livery, and no one will question it.
I know just the ones, Tristan said. They made the short list for Lay's guards back when I was choosing, and now work in the throne room.
Perfect, Laylee agreed, pushing her plate back. Now, is there anything else we need to panic about today, or can the rest wait for tomorrow? Connell reached for his wine.
Only one thing I can think of.
Turning, he looked down the table.
Jerry, Gianna, your positions as my wife's maids are conditional on our ability to trust you. I don't mean only the queen and me. I mean every person at this table. You two have just been given more power and prestige than you can ever imagine, but it comes with one very heavy responsibility. It's all secret. Everything Laylee says, does, and even thinks when she's not in public is yours to protect, and I assure you that if we hear a whisper of even the most innocent thing, like my wife's pregnancy, as an example, you two will be the ones hanged for treason first. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Your Highness, Gianna assured him. Cherry, however, had turned nearly white. I swear, Prince Connell, we women may protect the Queen differently from you men, but I assure you that we take it just as seriously. I already owe her my life. I think anything else pales in comparison. May we never need to find out, Laylee whispered under her breath. Chapter 12 That evening, Laylee took Tristan with her to visit the man who was like her second father. Despite her calm mask on the outside, her stomach was clenched with anxiety. This was not something she wanted to do. Right now, if she had to choose, she'd rather be waiting on the sands for the gong to sound. For some reason, talking to the master of horse about the legitimacy of his children scared her more than anything else she could imagine. Maybe it was her hormones. Most likely it was nothing more than the vague and blurry line that existed between childhood and maturity. As the queen, she had to think of what was best for her country, but Alain had always been so good to her. As a girl, he'd always had the time to spare a kind word or a little encouragement, even when her father couldn't. Back then, she hadn't known Chiara was anything more than a family friend, but Alain and his wife, her father's mistress, had been the dependable family Laylee had needed.
and now she was about to destroy all of that. It was a long and silent walk to his cabin on the far side of the horse pastures. While the palace kept a stable close for everyday mounts, most of the horses were far enough away that their smell wouldn't bother the sensitivities of the nobility, and Alain kept his home as close to his beloved animals as possible. As an added benefit, the distance also meant this visit was completely and totally private. That didn't mean they made it to his door without being spotted.
"Good afternoon, Your Majesty,"
Alain called from his doorway as soon as they were in sight.
"What brings you all the way out to see an old man like me?"
"Nothing good, I promise," she gestured to Tristan. "Have you met my secor yet?"
"Not formally."
Alain dipped his head in respect.
"Lord Oberheim, please, just call me Tristan." "Then Tristan and you, Lely, don't get a title under my roof. Come in, you two. Please, can I get you a drink?"
The inside of the stone cottage was trimmed in rough-hewn wood. The rooms were placed differently, but the sizes were almost identical to the ones she'd been given as a gladiator. Beside her, Tristan looked around in awe, a wistful smile on his mouth.
"So this," he said softly, "is what you meant when you called Villanelle home."
"Villanelle?"
Alain asked. Lely lowered herself into the closest chair. "The home of my first gladiator team, where I met Tristan. And yes, this is what I meant. I spent many days out here as a girl trying to hide from whatever boring thing I should have been doing."
"And yet she still did them," Alain added. "Lely was the most well-mannered young lady in the palace back in those days."
"Maybe," Lely said. "But I'm afraid I didn't just come out here for nostalgia." She paused, gesturing for the man to sit with her. "Alain, I know about your agreement with Dad. Your kids, I mean."
"Lely,"
he tried, but that was as far as he could get. "I didn't come here to judge you," she assured him. "In the last few months, I realized that the idealistic world we all want to live in doesn't actually exist. I can only imagine how hard it was for you to sacrifice yourself and your happiness to spoil my father like that. But I think it just proves that you really are family to us." First, he pulled in a deep breath, but only a moment later, Alain pushed himself to his feet. Sighing, he made his way into another room where the sounds of rummaging could be heard. Seconds later, he returned with a coarse amphora and selection of glasses. Clearly, his choice of drink was something more potent than wine.
"Your Majesty," he offered.
She waved him away, so he turned to Tristan, who accepted. For a moment, none of them said a thing, while Alain poured generous portions into a pair of glasses. Then he sat. Swirling the amber liquid, he admired it before swallowing almost the whole thing in one gulp. Then he cleared his throat and placed his empty glass on the small table beside him.
"This is not a conversation I ever wanted to have with a child who I consider to be one of my own," he finally admitted. "But I've always known it would happen. Oh, I assumed it would be Kale I'd end up talking to, but as a man, that made it easier."
He flashed her a weak smile.
"Lely, I assure you I did not sacrifice my happiness for your father's. Kiara was a dear friend from my childhood. A friend, Lely, and nothing more. A stable boy, regardless of his paltry title, has no problem playing with the kitchen staff's children. A prince? That wouldn't have been allowed. Your grandfather was a stickler for propriety."
"But you and Dad were friends too?" she asked. Alain nodded.
"For as long as I can remember. When Ilario had lessons, Kiara and I would run through the pastures. Fly kites or do other things that most normal kids enjoy. When Ilario came to play, she always managed to find us, and we just explained her away as being my friend. But there was this unquenchable spark between them. I knew it even back then."
He chuckled.
"I'd pretend to be the Rians attacking Oberheim, and your father would be the king defending the queen from the western heathens. I'd play the Deatons, and he'd be the king rescuing the damsel in distress on the road. No matter what, he was always playing to impress her. And it worked."
"And then he inherited the crown," she said, knowing where this story was going.
"Yeah," Alain whispered. "I will never forget the day he realized he had to marry one of the island princesses. Rhea had crushed our trade options, but the Island of Flowers was still buying and more every day. It was the only way to keep our country from collapsing on itself, you see. He had to make that alliance, but telling Kiara broke his heart.
Which is why he made her my mother's maid?
No, Alain said. No, that was Kiara's idea. Kalani was beautiful, but Norheim was too different from what she was used to. The rules were too strict. The only things she understood were sewing and reading, so she lost herself in those. I always thought she was like a caged bird, finding her happiness in the sky she was now denied. At first, Kiara was so jealous. She loved Elario, you understand, but it's no secret that a king must have a queen, and she was common. I understand, Tristan muttered.
Alain bobbed his head, showing he'd heard.
But as the queen's maid, she had rooms in the palace. She had reasons to be in the royal suite at all hours. No one ever questioned it, especially not after the queen found herself pregnant with Kale. Unfortunately, once the queen was bred, she had no interest in her husband, which made it easier for him to spend time with the woman he truly loved. It didn't take long before Kiara was also pregnant.
But why did you marry her? Layli asked.
Because she was my friend, Alain repeated. Kiara needed help, and it was the kind of help I could give. The two of us were never anything but friends. There was no bitterness about her feelings for Elario, and no need for her to deny it to me. My love is in the pastures. All I ever wanted was to be the master of horse, so I didn't feel that giving her the shelter of my name was a burden at all. I just had no idea that I'd actually enjoy being a father.
But love, Layli asked. Don't you deserve to have that, too? Alain shrugged.
Clearly it wasn't in the gods' plans, because I'm still waiting to meet the right woman. I assure you, Layli, that sharing a home with a friend and her beautiful children was a long way from being a hardship to me. It was wonderfully comfortable.
Layli knew he was telling the truth, because she'd seen it with her own eyes. He and Kiara had always been friendly, but never romantic. Not in all the years she'd known them. Somehow, that only made what she had to do even worse. I'm going to ask you a question, she said, leaning over her knees. And I'm not asking it as an Aravadi, but as a girl who loved spending time here and would never do anything to hurt you, okay?
Okay.
Would you be upset if my father wanted to claim his bastard children? Legitimize them. Tristan opened his mouth, but she shook her head subtly. It was just enough to make his lips snap shut before he examined her plan. She didn't want the weight of that to taint Alain's answer. She honestly wanted to know how he felt about that one simple thing before she decided how to best handle her need for a temporary heir. The horseman's eyes dropped to the worn rug beneath his feet and traced the pattern. She waited, giving him time to think about it. He sighed, rubbed at his mouth, and looked at another patch, but he didn't immediately reject the idea, so his answer didn't surprise her too much.
So long as I'm not cut off from them, I don't think so, he finally said. I do love my kids, Layli, and I count you among that batch. I also know that the king's bastards, especially right now, have a lot more chances ahead of them than the horsemen's.
And the talk in court that will come with it? Alain scoffed at that.
Like I care about those fools. I spend my time in the pastures. Besides, what will they say? That I was cuckolded by King Aravati?
He lifted a brow.
That I was forced to spend my life with a woman so beautiful that even the king couldn't resist her.
I was thinking more that your devotion to the crown was so strong that you gladly married the king's mistress to protect a second line of Aravati children. Layli reached over and clasped his hand. There are some who will say Dario should rule instead of me, but I trust my brother. If anything happens to me, I also know that he'll rule this country as well as my father. Alain, I want to name him my heir, conditional on the birth of my child, but it will put a target on him.
And I'll protect him the same way I did you, Alain swore. Dario's a strong boy, Layli. He'd make a wonderful prince. Esther will be a brilliant addition to court, and she'd love nothing more. It's Savio I'd worry most about. He's just a child.
Tristan asked.
11, right? Yeah, and he wasn't raised to deal with the intrigue of court. I'll make sure the guards keep an eye on him, Tristan promised. And I think the palace will have enough princes that he won't be under too much scrutiny.
And if he's rebellious, it will only prove he's Ilario's kid, Layli pointed out. Alain, you were always so responsible and respectable. It will only help prove how true my father's claim is. I just wanted to make sure that you'd be okay with this before I talk to Dad or Dario about it. I know it won't be easy, but my other options aren't as good.
No, Alain agreed. And at least you know my kids will never try to take the throne from you. If there is ever a coup, they'll all be beside you, not trying to destroy you. I'll deal with whatever happens, my girl. I know it won't be pleasant, but so long as your father comes out here every so often and drinks away the shame with me, we'll call it even.
Thank you, Layli told him. For this, for taking care of me, and everything else you've done for my family.
You know, Tristan said as he made his way to his feet. She talked about you a lot when we were in the games together. She always told me that if I got out before her, I had to find you, because she knew you'd save her. For the longest time, I thought you might have been her real father, that she was a bastard who just couldn't admit it.
No, Alain said, smiling over at Layli.
If I'd had a girl like that, I would have shamed myself to claim her. I think that's why I have no problem with Ilario wanting to tell everyone that Dario, Essa, and Savio are his. A lot of you are some damned fine kids. Makes me proud that I can claim a bit in making you that way, even if none of you are my own blood.
Chapter 13 When the pair returned to the royal suite, it was crowded. Connell and Timoteo had already retreated to their side, but the sitting room had four women filling the handful of chairs. Layli walked in and paused, taking a moment to let it sink in that this was going to be her new life, one filled with lots of people, knowing her most intimate secrets. Okay, she told the room. I need one of you to arrange for more chairs in here. Between my maids and guards, we'll need a lot more places to sit. I can do that, Astrid promised. Gianna lifted a finger. I actually think I can. I know the guy who handles storage. Let her, Layli decided, pointing at Gianna. Then she looked at Cherry. And welcome to the team. I'm sorry I didn't get to say that earlier, but it's been hectic. Thank you, Your Majesty. Layli, the other woman corrected in unison. Behind her, Tristan chuckled.
I think you've broken them.
Only because you broke me. Astrid, if Gianna's handling chairs, can you make the mahogany room our regular place for lunch? Expect a whole lot of us.
Shouldn't be a problem, Astrid agreed.
Good. Now out, everyone. I'm tired and just want to sleep for a few hours before we do this all over again. The women stood, most of them moving toward the door, except for Essa. She clutched her hands before her. What did Dad say? That he wants what's best for his kids, and that he claims all of Ilario's brood is his, basically. He said he'd never stand in any of your way, and doesn't care what people say about him, but if they try to say it about any of you, he'll make sure they regret it. Essa sighed, but it was with relief. I just hate the idea of anyone talking about him like that. He's done his best to be good to us. To me, too, Layli assured her. I plan to present this as Alain protecting a second line of Aravati from harm, and letting it be known that this was his duty to my father. I will not make it sound as if Kiara cheated on him, I swear. Essa nodded as she backed away. Thanks, Layli. I'm assuming Tristan will help you dress down. Good night.
Night, Layli told the girls, waiting until the door closed so she could lock it.
Tristan was already removing his weapons.
Does that mean we're getting a crowd for breakfast, too?
I hope not. And if we do, I'll make sure Astrid knows I'll send for help if I need it. I'm not sure I trust Cherry enough to have her walk in on us. She's just desperate enough that she might try to use that to her advantage.
But not Gianna, he asked. I'm pretty sure you've never met her before.
And you have? Tristan caught her waist and directed her toward their bedchamber.
A few times. She comes to meet Armando and walk home with him. Nice girl, and he's smitten with her. Don't let him try to convince you otherwise.
Do they have kids?
No. Armando said they want them, but his duties keep him away from home too much, so they've waited.
He closed the door behind them and latched it.
I was thinking we should move all of your guards onto this hall with the maids. Would make things easier.
Lifting her hair, she turned her back so he could unlace her dress. I agree. Make sure Crush and Armando have the rooms on the ends, because those are bigger. Wait, Mara has a child?
Mm-hmm.
Then give them a suite and let the kid have the staff room. Probably the same for Armando, so we won't need to move them later, huh?
Tristan's breath caressed her neck a second before his lips. I think you treat your staff better than any noble in history, Pop. You're an amazing queen, you know that?
The dress came free, and she let it fall to the floor before turning to face him. Slowly, Tristan's eyes slid down her body while a smile curled his lips higher. Laylee lifted an eyebrow and stepped back toward the bed. He followed, pulling his shirt free as he did so. I'm supposed to ask your advice on my father and brother, Laylee teased as she shed her underthings. And you're supposed to give me manly answers.
Really don't want to talk about your dad right now, he muttered. Lay, I've spent all day hearing about how pregnancy is going to change things. Should we really be doing this?
This? She lifted a brow.
I mean...
He paused, glancing to the wall.
Pup, I don't want to hurt the baby, but you're teasing me. All day long, I have to pretend to be nothing more than your friend, and then the moment we're alone, your eyes are begging me to throw you in that bed. What did the midwife say?
She huffed at him. Tristan, I'm pregnant. I've been pregnant for the last couple of months, and the baby is still just fine. I mean, it's not like you can breed me again.
No, but I need you to know that I'm okay if you don't,
He licked at his lips.
I've heard that it's not comfortable for some women, and I never want you to feel like you have to.
Slowly, he looked up, meeting her eyes.
Lay, I love you. I will love you, even if I'm just sleeping beside you with your head on my chest. I just don't know a damned thing about being a father, and I don't want to mess this up.
She gestured to his pants and boots. Then get out of those and prove it. Your mother says it's fine, and I think she knows a hell of a lot more about being pregnant than any pampered noble woman in this building. He obeyed, but it was clear his worries weren't completely gone. Laylee slid over, making room for him beside her. It was their normal evening routine, but for the first time, Tristan seemed uninterested in her naked body. After turning off the lamps, he claimed his spot and rolled to face her. Slowly, his hand caressed the side of her face, stopping to cup her cheek.
Lay, I don't have a clue what I'm supposed to do. I don't want to crush you, either of you, and I know that sometimes women feel different when they're carrying a child, like some things hurt that didn't used to. I don't want making love to hurt.
I'm fine, she insisted. His thumb slid along her cheek.
And you spent the morning puking. Things are different, Pop. I'm just trying to give you the chance to tell me. I know you. And I know you'll find a way to do whatever you think you must, but I never want to be an obligation. I want you to wrap your legs around me because you like to, not because you're worried I might expect anything.
She grabbed his arm and tugged, hoping to pull him over her. Unfortunately, Tristan was a rock. He didn't budge.
Wait, he begged. I want to talk about this before we get distracted.
About what? She asked. That I'm pregnant? I think we spent enough time making sure that happened. What more is there to talk about? With a frustrated sigh, she rolled over onto her back to wait for him to list off more things she shouldn't do. Sparring had been the first, and now this. Instead, he said,
About what you're thinking. I don't know. Maybe even about how you feel.
I feel fine. I feel like I wish that whatever changed today hadn't happened. You know, this is why I waited so long to tell anyone. I mean, the Doms and Boyers already spend most of their time trying to tell me how to act, and now you and the guard are going to start, aren't you?
We're really not, he tried to assure her.
Laylee just shook her head. No? Do you have any idea how much it hurts when you treat me like I'm not trying to be careful of our baby? Or how paranoid I am that being pregnant is going to give the Lords everything they need to take my responsibilities away? I just want you to trust me like you did in the arena. I wanted to come home, wrap myself in your arms, and convince myself that this was nothing more than a long day, and that it would all be normal again tomorrow. Tristan, I want you, of all people, to be on my side. Catching her arm, he forced her to look at him.
I am. I will always will be on your side, but this is what I need you to tell me. You've got so much to worry about already, and I feel like I'm desperately trying to keep up. I just want a few moments where we can actually talk.
Finally, she nodded. About what? My morning sickness? I was told it will eventually pass.